Manny Pacheco, and welcome to Forgotten Hollywood. I've written a paperback that tells America's story through the great character actors of Hollywood's golden age. Joining me on today's program is the radio columnist from the Orange County Register and my good friend Gary Lycan, who hosts our On the Backlot Report. As a matter of fact, we're going to take an in-depth look at Forgotten Hollywood's backlot. Gary has taken the time to scour the Golden Era of Hollywood section of our studio to come up with some of his memorable music gems during this hour's segment. This should be fun, since my co-host has such a unique perspective. And I'd like to welcome Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Manny.
We begin with our mini tribute to Max Steiner, who was nominated for 26 Academy Awards. He won 3 Oscars for his compositions. Steiner wrote hundreds of films, scores, that is, of his career, including Casablanca and A Summer Place. Let's begin with Casablanca. Your take on the movie.
Well, the funny thing about Casablanca is it's such a classic movie, I think, in part because of all those scenes with Bogart and Bergman. I mean, there was true chemistry between those two. The other part that's interesting to watch when you see the film is knowing how the script was put together. They were literally sending out pages each day, and you never really knew how the ending was going to occur. The actors did not know how it was going to finally wrap. That made that movie intriguing to watch, and to see its longevity over these years is amazing. But to me, the most interesting thing is something that other people maybe don't think about, and that is the number of character actors that are in this movie. To me, it's fascinating to watch not only the key scenes with Bogart and Bergman, but to watch the other scenes with performers like Sidney Greenstreet and Cuddle Zakal and Claude Rains.
Peter Lorre.
And Peter Lorre, of course. And to watch these actors, because many of them had just escaped from Europe to come over here. They were finding great work in films, and in a lot of ways they dominate this movie, but often in small scenes. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes Casablanca a great movie.
Well, you know, I have to put you on the spot. It's my number one favorite movie in the Golden Age.
Is it really? Okay.
Where does it rank with you?
It's up there in the top 10. As I always tell people, though, I really don't have a top 10 list per se. Mm-hmm. I sort of value the movies that I watch based on how many times do I want to sit there and watch it again and again and again. And that kind of forms my selection process. Casablanca does rate up there highly. Of course, you can always watch that film again and again. So I agree with you on how great a movie it is.
Now here's Ingrid Bergman's favorite song from Casablanca, originally from the 1931 Broadway musical, Everybody's Welcome. As Time Goes By on Forgotten Hollywood.
Play it once, Sam. For old time's sake.
I don't know what you mean, Miss Elsa.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say, I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman need man, and man must have his mate, that no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. Jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome love as time goes by.
This is Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco. I'm here with my guest today, the On the Backlot reporter, Gary Lycan. Motion pictures like A Summer Place and Peyton Place were game changers in the way adults and youths intermingled. Screenplay writers really captured the tension of these modern dramas. Your feelings?
I have definite feelings, especially about Peyton Place, because I remember I was cutting sixth period class at Tustin Middle School in the eighth grade. My mom picked me up. I hid in the back seat so no one would see me leaving, and we went to the West Coast Theater in Santa Ana to see an afternoon screening of Peyton Place. I loved it for the adult themes. Remember, I was only 14 years old, but Hope Lang was so hot. I mean, I went for her right away.
Oh, there you go.
I also just loved it for the adult themes as well, because Arthur Kennedy, who was in it, was scary to me. He was scary to me at that age. He was one of those characters that was so believable. You watched him steal the scene, yet he was not really a major character in the movie. A Summer Place, a little bit different. The music and the Percy Faith version that became a hit is really what you think about when you think of the movie. However, that particular version of the music is not what you hear when the credits first roll in the movie, because that's what I was looking for. And that music is slightly different. The Max Steiner version is different than the Percy Faith version. And people forget, actually, that Max Steiner composed the music.
You know, you mentioned Arthur Kennedy, who happens to be in both pictures.
That's right.
He's also in my book, Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History. But what I wanted to ask you about that, Arthur Kennedy and Troy Donahue, to me, is very much like the Nixon-Kennedy campaign, where Arthur Kennedy's the status quo, kind of, you know, the old guard. Troy Donahue represents the new generation. Do you see that comparison?
I thought maybe not as much as you did, because when I watched A Summer Place, I thought it wasn't as strong a picture as Peyton Place. I thought that the dialogue was a little bit stilted. It didn't hold my attention as much because, again, I was looking at Sandra Dee, and so the rest, you know, didn't matter. I kept waiting. When are these two going to hook up and just, you know, get into it and really have a lot of fun? So I kept watching for that. I think the other interesting part, though, is Dorothy Malone, you know, was the star in A Summer Place. And she would go on to play the Lana Turner role of the main character on Peyton Place on the TV series.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so there was that kind of thing where, okay, she kind of morphed from A Summer Place into Peyton Place. Peyton Place, I thought, was by far the better movie.
Right.
A Summer Place, so, but boy, the women were hot.
And the music was great. Now, you have this wonderful story. I want to talk about the idea of Max Steiner versus Percy Faith. Now, you mentioned the two of them, but they were different. But people remember Percy Faith.
They remember Percy Faith because Max Steiner was considered basically, in a lot of ways, a studio musician. He did the soundtracks for a number of production over the years, and people knew him within the industry, and if you had a soundtrack, you heard Max Steiner's music. But Percy Faith, being a popular performer at the time, when he did the Summer Place theme, that's the one that climbed the charts. That was the version that was slightly different. He was just doing a cover version of Max Steiner's memorable music. But if you would ask people today, they probably think, oh, Percy Faith, yes, he wrote A Summer Place. Not true. Max Steiner did it, and Max Steiner really deserves the credit for it, although the Percy Faith version is delectable, you know, even today.
And number one song. This is Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco with my good friend Gary Lycan. You have brought great material from the back lot. Right now, we're going to chat about that moment in Hollywood history when Al Jolson once said, "You ain't heard nothing yet."
Yes, my next choice is a song called Make 'em Laugh from Singin' in the Rain. The plot covers the transition of silent to sound. And while we are used to Fred Astaire as the aristocratic dancer, Gene Kelly is the star of Singin' in the Rain, and he's our everyman. We love watching him work, but he's like one of us. He's not the aristocratic person that Astaire necessarily was. What's interesting about Make 'em Laugh is 4 years before Singin' in the Rain, a Cole Porter composed song called Be a Clown was performed by Gene Kelly and Judy Garland in the movie The Pirate. Well, Stanley Donner, who was doing Singin' in the Rain, needed a song for Singin' in the Rain, and he went to composer Arthur Freed, who wrote Make 'em Laugh. If you listen to Judy Garland and Gene sing, "Be a clown, be a clown, be a clown" in The Pirate, then you listen again to Make 'em Laugh, Make 'em Laugh, Make 'em Laugh, you will realize you are hearing virtually the same song with a new name and lyrics. Robert Osborne on Turner Classic Movies, he told that story one night on TCM and said because Arthur Freed was a good friend of Cole Porter, Porter never sued for plagiarism.
And Donald O'Connor never worked harder than he did performing that song. Let's check them both out. You're tuned to Forgotten Hollywood.
Dress in huge baggy pants, and you ride the road to romance.
A butcher or a baker, ladies never embrace.
A barber for a ball would be a social disgrace.
They all will come to call if you can fall on your face.
Be a clown, be a clown, be a clown.
Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said, be an actor, my son, but be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet. Make them laugh, make them laugh, make them laugh. Make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My grandpa said go out and tell them a joke, but give it plenty of hope. Make them roar, make them scream. Take a fall, but a wall, split a seam. You start off by pretending you're a dancer with grace. You wiggle till they're giggling all over the place. And then you get a great big custard pie in the face. Make them laugh.
Gary Lycan is with me. I'm Manny Pacheco. I have to agree with you. The two of them do sound very similar. Recently, Turner Classic Movies featured moguls and movie stars. We were talking about TCM.
Yes.
Seven-part original documentary that covered Hollywood from the silent era to the 1970s. Gary and I were both dismayed that there was no mention of the iconic Laurel and Hardy. Let's talk about Laurel and Hardy for a second.
Laurel and Hardy were just amazing. If you look at their silent work, that was incredible, but also they transitioned so well to sound. When you hear Oliver speak or you hear Stan Laurel speak, how they spoke matched their characters very precisely. Their comedy was absolutely brilliant. You know, their best work was done for Hal Roach. Their work suffered a little bit in later years when they were under MGM. But under Hal Roach, it was inventive, it was funny, it was so slapstick, but yet it was almost like an everyman kind of approach, because we could all identify when Ollie has had it or Stanley goofs up and makes a huge mistake. That was part of the brilliance of Laurel and Hardy. Their comedy was timeless. You can watch those comedies today, decades after they were filmed, and they're still funny. They're still hilarious. And that's why I was so disappointed that there wasn't more time allocated to them on that particular special on Turner Classic Movies.
Well, one thing I noticed is that Oliver Hardy created what is called the slow burn, which is to get angry in a very slow way, in a very visual way, and actually look at the audience.
He looked at that fourth wall. You know, they call it the fourth wall, right, when you actually look at the camera. And yes, and he did that, and he did it so effectively. I mean, once he looked it out there at you, you knew exactly what he was thinking. You knew. Sometimes they were simple little things, like when they both wore each other's hat, and all of a sudden Ollie puts on Stanley's hat, and he got this little bowler on the top of his head. Yeah, it was hilarious that, you know, something like that could happen, but you got it. I mean, it was just brilliant comedy.
Why do you think they were omitted from the documentary?
I have no idea. I mean, I was really disappointed. I thought it was a selection process. I mean, the documentary supposedly took a couple of years to do. It seems like there was a lot of emphasis on Buster Keaton and others. And
appropriately.
Appropriately so.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Laurel and Hardy did not get their due. And I
at
was
least
very disappointed.
Just a mention.
Just a mention.
That's,
I mean,
right.
It should have been a lot more. But
since this is a radio show, let's talk about one of the things that people don't think about, and that is the combination of their timeless humor with the music that they played in the background.
I think Laurel and Hardy, one of the things that you first remember about Laurel and Hardy, you could be anywhere in the house, and if you hear that cuckoo song theme, you immediately know, oh my God, Laurel and Hardy is on. I can't recall any other comedy team that had so many songs associated with their comedy.
I think an intro,
remember,
the Three Stooges might become close.
That's true. I would say that's true.
The Three Blind Mice.
But with Abbott and Costello, no.
No, no.
With other comedians, no. Three Stooges, a little bit closer. But basically, with Three Stooges, it was pretty much Three Blind Mice, and that was it.
That was it, yeah.
The beauty of this is that Laurel and Hardy had like 26 different songs that they would use in their films, and as soon as we heard one, we either knew what was going to happen, or what the setup was, or what was, you know, if it was going to be a piano going down the stairs, or putting pies in somebody's face. The music kind of telegraphed what was going to happen.
Set the scene. Yeah,
yeah, beautifully.
What we're going to do is we're going to go back in time and listen to one of the classic Laurel and Hardy bits.
Okay,
and we're going to ourselves, we're yes. going to insert one of their timeless pieces of music. Now, this particular bit did not have any music. We have to say this right. at the outset. But we are going to show you how important their music was to their bits. So we're going to insert the two together, kind of morph them together and see what we get. I think we're going to get something real special.
Oh, I do too. And I have to give credit in terms of the newer music that was recorded. The newer music that will be heard is from a wonderful CD. It was recorded in 1992 by a group called the Bohunks, very appropriately. Exactly. They lovingly recreated all the Laurel and Hardy music, and you'll hear some of that in this segment that we're about to do for you, and I think you'll totally enjoy it.
Laurel and Hardy on Forgotten Hollywood.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, Hal Roach presents for your entertainment and approval, Laurel and Hardy.
Well, what's new, sugar?
Oh, nothing much. What's new with you?
Oh, nothing to speak of.
Yes, there is. You didn't tell her about going to the convention.
What convention?
That's right. I'm glad you reminded me. You see, the Sons of the Desert are giving their annual convention in Chicago next week. And Stan and I are going.
Oh, you are?
We thought the trip would do us good. Besides being good for us in a business way. You see, we'll meet new friends and see a lot of new faces. And the change of climate will be good for us in a good many ways. And besides, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Jack who?
Well, I hope you have a nice time, dear.
Thank you, sugar. What's that for?
Just this. You're not going.
What do you mean I'm not going?
Just that. You're not going to the convention. You're going to the mountains with me.
But he can't go to the mountains, you see. He took a note. And the exhausted ruler said that...
Now listen, Dogo. You keep out of this.
Wait a minute. Sugar, there's no use getting excited. You're making a mountain out of a molehill.
Certainly, life isn't short enough.
Are you going?
Huh?
I said, are you going?
Yes, Sugar. Mrs. Hardy.
Who said so?
Him.
Oh. Well, you can do as you please. But you're going to the mountains with me.
Now, wait a minute. You listen to this. I want this understood once and for all. I'm not going to the convention. I'm going to the mountains.
That's just what I said. That you're not going to the mountains. That you're going to the... That you're going to the mountains.
Well, why don't you compromise?
What do you mean, compromise?
Well, he means, sweetheart.
Oh, shut up. If you think that you're going gallivanting off with a lot of hoodlums to any convention whenever you want to, you're not. Not for a minute you're not. Here I am, slaving day after day, washing and ironing till my fingers bleed. And do you appreciate it? Do you?
Well, you don't give...
Oh, shut up. Don't talk back to me. Just because I'm unselfish, what does it get me? Working for you. Working for your interests. I plan a vacation for you in the mountains at a nice resort where they play bridge and have lectures on art and color. I fight crowds in department stores, dying of the heat, killing myself trying to get a nice mountain outfit together. Why? Why?
Why?
Oh, you keep out of this. I'll tell you why, so you won't be ashamed of me. And do you appreciate it? Do you? Ha! You want to take the first chance to run out to the convention. Convention. You'll go to the convention over my dead body. I'll put you in jail first. And you too, with the rest of the sons of the... Oh, the sons of the dead.
When we return to Forgotten Hollywood, my co-host Gary Lycan and I will look at some of the lush scores from Hollywood cinema of the 1950s. Manny Pacheco here. Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, and Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History shares Americana through the eyes of actors who appear under the titles of such iconic movies such as The Wizard of Oz.
That's a horse of a different color. Come on in!
Casablanca.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
And It's a Wonderful Life.
A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History was recently a 2013 gold medal recipient from the Reader's Favorite Book Awards, complete with a star-studded ceremony in Miami. You can purchase the entire Forgotten Hollywood book series on Amazon and at independent bookstores, and you can download the first paperback to your virtual library as an ebook for your Kindle, Nook, or on your favorite e-reader through Apple. The Forgotten Hollywood book series is a perfect gift. I invite you to visit ForgottenHollywood.com and pick up a copy of these books today. Welcome back to Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco. Today joining me is the radio columnist of the Orange County Register, Gary Lycan, as he picks out selected memories from Hollywood's golden era. Picnic. One of your favorite films?
It is one of my favorite films. And again, I think you probably know by now why. You
know? Kim Novak.
We started out with Hope Lang. We went to Sandra Dee. And here we are now. It's getting much more sexy here. Kim Novak. Oh, my God. I mean, again, I'm a young kid. And my eyes are like bug-eyed and wide open watching that beautifully sensual romantic scene with her and William Holden. You know, for people who don't remember, of course, Picnic is the story of an ex-college football star turned drifter. He arrives in a small Kansas town. Yes, there's great performances in the movie by Rosalind Russell and others, but again, it's Kim Novak and William Holden that you focus on. James Wong Howe. Try to say that.
Three times, that's right.
His widescreen photography for the film was considered trendsetting.
CinemaScope.
Yes.
Yeah.
What most people don't realize is the CinemaScope format was highlighted in the film's final aerial shot when it pulls back to frame a sprawling horizon showing both a freight train and a Continental Trailways bus separately bearing the two leading characters. This film had a restoration in the mid-1990s, many people may not even realize that, which brought many art house screenings and people had a chance to see this and appreciate it, but it was considered trendsetting at the time.
You know, the Pulitzer Prize winning novel by William Inge, I mean, it was directed by the acclaimed Joshua Logan, whose credits include Mr. Roberts. There was a lot going for this film.
Oh, there's a lot going for it, but most of all, I think William Holden. He was a huge draw. What people may not realize is he shaved his chest for the shirtless shots and was reportedly nervous about dancing in that classic moon glow scene at the very end of the movie. So Logan took him to Kansas roadhouses where he practiced steps in front of jukeboxes with choreographer Miriam Nelson. Heavy thunderstorms with tornado warnings repeatedly interrupt the shooting of that particular scene on location, and they finally had to complete it on the back lot back in Burbank.
You talk about Moonglow, but actually that was also a unique thing that they did. They took a theme, Picnic, combined it with a classic standard, Moonglow, and it became a bona fide hit.
It really did. And again, is key to that particular scene when you see Kim Novak and William Holden dancing. And it's one of those things that you hear today. It's a song that when you hear the theme from Picnic, you almost think of it as one continuous song, not even realizing really that Moonglow comes in on the back end of it. And like you said, Moonglow was back in, what, the 1930s?
Right, exactly.
And it was a bona fide, you know, bandstand hit back in those days. But this was in a different context, and it worked perfectly.
And here's a look back at this fine dramatic score from Picnic on Forgotten Hollywood.
Thank you.
Wow, Love is a Many Splendid Thing, another 1955 drama with William Holden and an Oscar-winning best song of 1955.
What I use, my criteria is, do I want to see a movie over and over again? And this is a movie I can watch over and over again. It's a pure, simple love story set against the China background. The location scenery is beautiful. Holden does not have to stretch his acting muscles too much here to play the journalist, but yet we really care for his character. We care for the Jennifer Jones character. It's a love story. It's a simple, basic love story. And when she learns he has been killed, we know he's going to return to the hill one more time when she'll see his image, and then they'll say goodbye one more time. So it's like looking at that image and the image kind of fading into the sunset.
Mm-hmm. You know, the song itself that won the Academy Award was up against Unchained Melody, Love is a Tender Trap. It beat some really good tunes.
And, but I have to say, Love is a Splendid Thing is a really good movie. I mean, I still get goosebumps when I watch it. I think if you look back now, I have to wonder if the movie would have been as memorable if the song had not been there. I think this is one case where the song drove the movie. It's a beautiful film, don't get me wrong, and I love watching it, but it's that music that is so haunting and so beautiful that makes it memorable.
My friend Gary Lykin is sharing his movie music moments. Let's talk about The Blackboard Jungle. It seems that you like movies from 1955. Picnic, Love is a Many Splendid Thing. There was a cultural upheaval, though, going on in 1955, and The Blackboard Jungle might have been the movie.
What can I say? I was turning 11 years old. I was about 11 years old, and I was an only child, and I was hooked on all this stuff that was happening that year. Blackboard Jungle, I saw this one also at the West Coast Theater in Santa Ana, and it was jolting. It was really jarring to sit in a darkened theater. The theater is quiet, and all of a sudden you hear this pounding beat of rock around the clock. You know, it comes at you like a major thrust. It was amazing. It's a black and white classic, of course, as far as the movie. They could never have made this film in color because it would have lost the texture of the story. Mm-hmm. Compelling performances by Glenn Ford, Sidney Poitier, Vic Morrow. You could see that all these actors would go on to bigger and better roles.
And this movie also came on the heels of the iconic Brando performances, the James Dean performances. A movie like this was just destined to happen.
It was destined to happen. And I remember once I saw this movie, I loved it. And I couldn't wait, though, to get out and go to the record store and get the 45. And that was the first 45 I ever bought on Decca of Rock Around the Clock. And
on
of course,
Decca.
The flip side for trivia people is 13 Women was on the flip side of that.
My God.
But I still have it today.
Well, let's play it. Bill Haley and the Comets with the opening theme of Blackboard Jungle. On Forgotten Hollywood.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock, gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes two, three and four, if the band slows down, we'll yell for more. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Chimes ring 5, 6, and 7. We'll be right in seventh heaven. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Oh, and it's 8, 9, 10, 11, 2. I'll be going strong, and so will you. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco. Today, my co-host is sitting in our guest chair and has selected a variety of movie music for your pleasure. And you should know, Gary Lycan is a fan of horror and sci-fi, the genre that just scares me to death. That's not one of my favorites, but it's one of yours. Let's talk about the Kevin McCarthy film. You happen to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, I love the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I mean, that's one I can watch. I can watch that one so many times, even though I know what's going to happen. It scared the heck out of me when I first saw it. You know, the next few times my mom took me to the supermarket, anything I saw, anything in the vegetable or fruit section resembling a pod. I mean, don't even mention pea pods. I was ready to bolt from the store.
You know, it's funny about that, though. I bring that up only because Kevin McCarthy passed away last year.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, yes.
It shouldn't be forgotten.
No, it should not be forgotten. Just don't call me Shirley. No, that's another story.
That's another story. That's right.
But my musical choice, now let's talk about now about music. My musical choice for classic horror is the very low-budge The Blob. By the way, this was Steve McQueen's first starring role, and the title song was surprisingly written by Burt Bacharach. It was his first film credit.
Really? Wow. Well, here's the most unusual theme from The Blob on Forgotten Hollywood.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall, a splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall, a splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall, a splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall, a splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Thank you.
I just love the Pink Panther theme. I'm Annie Pacheco. You're listening to Forgotten Hollywood. I'm glad you selected the Pink Panther theme. As a matter of fact, the Pink Panther was honored in December of 2010. You have some information on that.
The nice thing was the National Film Registry of the Library of Congress made its annual edition of 25 films to be preserved for their position as American cultural touchstones. You know, they do this every year. The Film Registry honored the work of the late Leslie Nielsen with Airplane and the late Blake Edwards with The Pink Panther. There are a number of other films, but it was so good to see Pink Panther make the list and forever to be on a national registry and long remembered as representative of his work.
Blake Edwards, of course, even though he's known for his comedy work with Peter Sellers, he did direct Breakfast at Tiffany's and Days of Wine and Roses. I mean, he does have a real good pedigree.
Oh, he absolutely has a very good pedigree. Again, Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know, we talk about Moon River. Every time I see the finale of Breakfast at Tiffany's and Audrey Hepburn is rescuing and looking for and then rescuing the cat in the pouring rain, I mean, I'm bawling, you know. throw me the tissues because, my God, I get so emotional. That cat is rescued. The cat is being drenched, you know, by the rain. But it's a beautiful ending to the movie.
Right, and you can thank also Henry Mancini for his fine score.
Yes,
absolutely.
I mean, Mancini and Edwards, they had a great partnership. Because, again, most people don't realize they also did Peter Gunn, they did Mr. Lucky, and a number of TV shows as well. They had a great collaborative place in American musical history as far as composing goes, I think.
Your final choice, That's Entertainment. How apropos. A personal tribute to Hollywood's back lot.
I've always liked that song from the moment I heard it. I mean, it's iconic, and you hear it so often. You hear it at the Academy Awards. You hear it at other events. It just says what the industry is about. That's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it. Yes, it was used in the Bandwagon in 1952, but personally, I like what was used in the That's Entertainment documentary that came along a little bit later.
Right, in the 1970s.
Right. And I just love that particular song. You know, I can lip sync and I can dance around to it in the living room and, you know, and
leave it
says
to
everything.
Leave it to MGM to, of course, really capture their movie documentary with naming it That's Entertainment.
Yes.
And then using the music.
And if we remember, too, that was the film when they started to do the retrospective. They brought back, you know, Kelly and Astaire and a number of others to come out of retirement, basically, and do special sequences for that particular movie. So it really had a That's Entertainment value to
That's
it.
That's right. Well, let's hear it. That's Entertainment on Forgotten Hollywood.
The clown with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean, that's entertainment.
The lights on the lady in tights,
or the bride with the guy on the side,
or the ball where she gives him her all, that's entertainment.
The plot can be hot, simply teeming with sex.
A gay divorcee who is after her ex.
It could be Oedipus Rex,
where a chap kills his father and causes a lot of bother.
The clerk who is thrown out of work.
By the boss who is thrown for a loss.
By the skirt who is doing him dirt.
The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. While the jury is out, or the thrill when they're reading the will, or the chase for the man with the face, that's entertainment.
The dame who is known as the flame
of the king of an underworld ring.
He's an ape who won't let her escape.
entertainment. It might be a fight like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen. Some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with a mystical hand. Hip hooray, the American way. The world is a stage, the stage is a world of entertainment.
Join us next week for another edition of Forgotten Hollywood.